minimal level of career technical education, and we're working to identify career technical offerings that we can have on every one of our campuses, as well as places we will go deep at places like Benson. Mm-hmm. And music, yes. So I'm going to tell you, one of the things we will be doing a concerted effort is trying to have musical instruments available as we're trying to build music programs back. So we will actually be working to figure out how we fill that gap, and that's a one-time investment that can be made to help us build capacity to do music.
I thought we'd had to eliminate athletics at some school as well.
We talked last year when we were doing the budget cut about what level of PE we were going to be able to continue to offer with certified PE instructors at every one of our campuses, and we've now identified a minimum threshold of PE at each one of our schools. And I'm going to tell you, the outpouring of support for how do we maintain PE in all of our schools was overwhelming. So we're going to be in similar conversations this year, I can guarantee you.
Right. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, so Commissioner Leonard.
Can I just follow up on the PE?
Yeah.
Because I just saw a story in the news last night about how several states are eliminating the requirement for PE for their kids. Fortunately, Oregon wasn't one of those states when they put the map up. So do we now have PE for every child in Portland Public Schools?
We have PE. We have a minimum threshold of PE staffing with certified PE teachers. Mm-hmm. And actually, as part of the proposed bond measure that we're putting forward, we're looking at proposing to have outdoor play areas that extend the ability to have activity and use year-round activity, so outdoors that expands. So it's both a teaching capacity and a what do we have space designed to accommodate.
So you said you had adequate, or you have a...
We don't have adequate anything,
you
guys.
Minimum, okay, so you said the minimum.
We don't have adequate anything. Here's what I'm going to just tell you.
Like, you said you have something
making
about certified...
The best do with what you got.
Certified PE instructors, does that translate into every child having a PE class?
It's not necessarily, it's PE offering. So again, we're down to like periods of the week that somebody, so here's what I'll say to you. We are in, after whatever, 15 years of cutting and still cutting, we're working to hang on to a bare minimum of programming for students that truly is, how do we schedule periods to make sure kids have access to some kind of art, some kind of PE elective. And it's a wonderful thing if we're able to offer a class that's actually offered every day of the week to a student. That doesn't occur in all of our schools. So how's that? Yeah, we don't have adequate anything. And as the governor said at the business summit on Monday, it's like, okay, we may be able to go for stable, but it's stable at a very low threshold. It's not adequate anything. So we identified as a state a quality education model that it would take to actually get every one of our students to the kind of outcomes that we're looking for, and we are so far below funding at that level.
What's that spread? What's the difference?
Oh, boy, I wish I could just whip that out for you. Like, I can't. It's a significant gap that we've never even come close to it at funding it as a state level. And Portland is doing a similar thing for our own internal, what would be our quality education model, an enormous gap.
I think 10 years ago when Lynn Lundquist did that, it was $2 billion was the gap.
So it's the gap.
Yeah.
It's significant. We're significantly underfunding education in the state.
And on that happy note, but truthful.
I know, but thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
I would just like to extend my thanks to you and to the board, school board, for all the hard work you do.
Thank you.
We're going to have a vote on the report. So motion to accept.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Anyone wish to testify in this matter? Sue, can you please call the vote?
Leonard.
Well, this is very frustrating to listen to because we have people that are true believers in the educational system working as hard as they can to maximize as much as they can of what is on the table. But I have to give my own perspective on that, and it feels to me as though we have a group of children who have one apple to split amongst themselves, and you can only cut the apple so many ways. And you can have a thick piece for a few or very, very skinny pieces for everyone that doesn't provide them nutrition they need. All of this happening simultaneously. I mean, I can't help but tie it together, not just local events, but state events and national events, to what we're hearing here today, which is we have dramatically underfunded education. So at a time when it appears that the federal government is on the precipice of approving tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans that will amount to $750 million added to the deficit, if my math is correct, and I know Janie Haar from the Oregonian will check in her political facts, so I tried to rough out my math here, but if that amount of cash is $750 million, which appears to be what's reported that would be added to the deficit for the tax break for those that make $250,000 a year or more, and if that were just divided amongst the 50 states, Oregon would get $15 million, and if Portland School District got just 20% of that, that would be $3 million, and my rough math tells me that would be about 30 teachers. And one has to wonder in the Portland School District what 30 teachers unleashed to do what isn't being done today could provide. That puts just that one small national debate into some context, I think, locally for us. But I can't let Oregon off the hook either. It's a little frustrating to me to have read accounts of the recently convened Oregon Business Summit, and then again connecting that with the viscerous fight of the business community to raise their business taxes in just a couple of elections ago, and the meltdown that occurred with them, while we still today, even with the increased revenue that we will receive from that tax, if I recall correctly, the legislature is still $3 billion short in balancing the next budget. It's very frustrating to hear people articulate, even business leaders articulate out of one side of their mouth the need to fund each of the, what I think are 196 school districts in Oregon adequately, while on the other side, the incoming governor predicts a demise in the quality of life across the board for all Oregonians. And I don't want this to sound like a partisan issue, so I'll be bipartisan. The current governor went to the current legislative leadership, which is Democratic, and asked them to put on this last ballot a measure to repeal the kicker, a provision that returns hundreds of millions of dollars to certainly people who don't need it, but working-class Oregonians as well, who I would argue benefit most from a well-funded education system. And the Democratic leadership said this is not the time to do that. So you wonder, you know, when is the time for people to not just do what you all are doing, which is excellent work, but it still doesn't provide more apples in the bag. It takes the one apple and tries to slice it different ways, and certainly tries to focus what resources we have to get the biggest bang out of the buck. But my continued frustration, having not just observed but also been in the arena in the Oregon Senate and the Oregon House, is listening to otherwise responsible people continuously talk about how important education is. And by this, I don't mean just K through 12, but Head Start is a vitally important program for kids, and it's been demonstrated to be so through countless outside studies. But community college and universities as well are vitally important, particularly for the poorest and particularly for the working class people who live in this state, but then on the other side, consistently vote against measures that actually not even adequately fund, begin to approach funding education at the level it needs to be funded. And until we have a summit with all of the folks that have the means to make that happen, focus on that issue, this is just another frustrating time to listen to us try to do with what we have, which is not enough to fund education adequately. So I appreciate the work you're doing, and I hope at some point that we can all work together to address the larger issue, which is adequately funding education, not just in Portland or Multnomah County, but in the state and I would say in the United States. We are, by all accounts, becoming second tier in our educational system nationally, and we will all pay for that ultimately. Thank you for the work you've done. Aye.
Fritz.
Thanks to Carol Smith representing all of the superintendents in Multnomah County. That's a wonderful step forward in itself, and I appreciate you coming to talk. To Bill Scott and Dan Ryan and Sarah Mensah, thank you for your presentation, and thank you mostly for your work. I always considered Mayor Katz the education mayor for the 17 years that I was a parent in Portland Public Schools. She saved us over and over again. And so it's really no surprise to see Mayor Adams continuing her great work and also being the education mayor. And I greatly appreciate the work of you and your team, Kelly Ladd, and all of the staff in your office. It's an important focus, as was mentioned. This is about jobs the economy. It's not just children and families, although those are certainly very important. Reese Lord and Todd Diskin worked really hard on getting the TriMet bus passes back, and that was on the consent agenda today. I'm highlighting that because my son, who's a step-up tutor at Marshall High School, his students had them text me to say, are we going to get our bus passes? We need to be able to get to school in January. So it's hugely significant, and the students want to be in school. They want to learn. They want to be able to get to school. And so the new partnership whereby the city and the school district will guarantee that even if the state tax credits go away, we will make sure that students can get the bus to school is huge. So thank you very much for that. I suggest that it should be conception to career because the prenatal care is also important. In fact, taking vitamins and folic acid before you conceive is really helpful.
What about flirtation to career?
Before conception, Mayor. Yeah. No.
Flirtation to the grave.
And we have to recognize that some of our children in school are having children themselves, and I particularly respect Parkhurst High School, which makes sure that those students, that there's child care for their students, and I know that happens in other high schools also. This is only the beginning. It only scratches the surface of what we've covered today and what, together in the partnership, we're working on. Just a week or so ago, we had a presentation from Resolutions Northwest about their restorative justice program in Parkhurst Middle School. 262 children, students who would otherwise have been suspended or expelled, are currently still at school because of that program. And so we need to make sure that we're actually addressing the issues. And when we have to expel a student, at the end of the expulsion hearing, there needs to be a conversation, well, tomorrow you will, and have an ongoing plan for how we're following up with that student. Because although their behavior may have done something that means that they can't be at that particular school, they are still a minor student, and we need to get them to another program. So I hope to be involved in some of that ongoing work. One of the other things I'd like to see, we mentioned the Summer Youth Connect program. It would be helpful to have a central list of all of the bureaus and all the programs that are offered by in the city on to help students have summer jobs. I know that Fire and Water and the Parks Bureau, Planning, Council offices all offer opportunities for students to have meaningful work during the summer, and we hope that they might then want to be city employees in the future. So it would be helpful if we categorize that. So again, when we have things like the gun ordinance, people come and say, well, this isn't it. We're like, yeah, we know this isn't it. This is part of it, but this is part of the whole spectrum, and I think that's hugely important. Finally, I did spend 17 years as a parent in Portland Public Schools. I grew up in Portland Public Schools. I didn't know how to be an American citizen before I was in Portland Public Schools. And I have been in Roosevelt and Lentz and Park Rose and David Douglas and Markham and Wilson and Jefferson, just those are the ones I have off the top of my head over the last couple of years. There is still great work being done in Portland's schools, in all of the districts in our schools, magnificent teachers, awesome students struggling against amazing odds who are still dedicated to not only surviving but thriving. So for anybody watching at home who's thinking, well, there's not enough money, well, for a start, it was the Portland area voters who voted in Measure 5, and that's one of the reasons that we have not enough money. And that's a lesson to us all to beware that if a ballot measure tells us schools will be held harmless, we really need to do our homework and make sure that that's going to be true. And in fact, how our schools going to be made whole again is a huge question that faces our state as a whole. But if you're a parent in Portland wondering whether you should send your child to kindergarten, try it. Every school in Portland has wonderful teachers doing wonderful things and a wonderful community where students and parents and everybody works together to make things work for more people. So that's in itself would, if we boost attendance in our schools, we get more money from the state. That in itself would help restore some of the programs that Commissioner Leonard mentioned. So just try it. I'm convinced you will like it. Aye.
Fish.
You know, Dan, I was listening to your testimony, you referenced beleaguered and tired parents coming home to their kids at night, and it struck a chord. We work very hard up here, and I have to say that after a long day, when I go home and there's two students in my house, one a first grader and one a 12th grader, and I come home tired and they need help, and I can't for the life of me figure out the calculus that my daughter is working on, and I don't speak the language that my son is now fluent in, it's very challenging. So I say thank God for my partner, because my wife's a teacher and can help my two kids in ways that, frankly, I can't. Now, you know, Patty is the first woman in her mother's side of the family to go to high school. So someone believed in her and helped her go to high school, go to very nice, very good, high-quality college, and then got a Ph.D. at Princeton University. And the interesting thing about that is it didn't cost her family any money to get that education. But she obviously had some people around her that were pushing her in that direction. It started with her mother, who was an immigrant from Spain, who understood that her children had to get a good education to get ahead. But it also obviously met a whole infrastructure of people who supported her and encouraged her and helped her find her way to Mount Holyoke and to financial aid and to Princeton and through to a dissertation and a PhD and ultimately a job in Portland teaching at PSU. So what we're trying to do is I listen to your very inspiring testimony across the board is we're, as a community, we're trying to create these systems so that every Patty Schechter out there has the same opportunity. Because my wife came from absolutely nothing in terms of financial resources. But, you know, because people supported her and believed in her, she got her PhD and pursued the career of her choice. So that's what I hear you saying is our goal. And I compliment the mayor for the leadership role he's played. And frankly, this movement around alignment is not limited to education. Because in a zero-sum game, we have to spend the money more wisely. And we're doing it in housing, and we're doing it in criminal justice. We're doing it in, and it doesn't work without high level of collaboration between the county and the city. The voters are not interested, apparently, in having the two governments collapse and become one. So the next best thing is we have to work more effectively together. So thank you. Thank you for all the work that you do, all of you who testified, and Mayor Adams, thank you for your leadership. I do want to comment on something Randy said, because I, too, was struck by the fact that, and Anna Griffin, I think, really put an exclamation mark on it, today's Oregonian. Coming out of the business summit was a frankly, by now, familiar litany of asks going forward to jumpstart the economy. Some that we're already working on, like shovel-ready dirt. Others, like reducing the capital gains tax, which strikes me as leading us another dead-end debate on taxes. But across the board, other things we can do to make our economy work better and put more people to work and therefore generate more resources. But I, too, felt that what was really missing was a fundamental understanding that education is the pathway to our prosperity. And rather than talk about cuts in taxes or other kinds of things, which invariably become very divisive in this state, we ought to all rally, and that includes the business community, around investing in education. So I remain hopeful that the business community will rally around, Carol, your efforts this spring to pass a bond measure and to, if you so choose, renew a levy. And I think unless we do it, as Randy's pointed out, and Randy worked in Salem and knows the challenges, unless we do it, it's not going to happen through Salem in the short term. And I think we're all incredibly discouraged by the opening gambit of $5.4 billion for education. That would result in significant further cuts here in all of the districts in Portland, and that's not acceptable. And finally, something that a number of you folks taught me a long time ago is that people don't want to invest in failure. They want to invest in success. So we've stopped talking about education and doomsday scenarios. We've talked about investing in kids. So let's agree as a group that Portland is not going to get caught up in the death spiral rhetoric. that people are free to frame these challenges as they will, but we're not going to buy into death spiral. We're going to buy into the other way, which is coming together, making the investments, supporting our children, and then having those children get great jobs and fulfill their highest aspirations. So, Mayor Adams, thank you for your leadership, and I'm pleased to join with my colleagues in adopting this report. Aye.
Salzman.
Well, I want to commend Mayor Adams and Chair Kogan and all the other people who worked very hard on this report and for the hopeful steps forward. I think that some of the issues I was raising in my questioning are ones that I think about quite a bit, and that is those children who have experienced trauma in their lives, whether it's abuse, whether it's being yanked from their family and being placed in custody of the state and then perhaps moving through other foster placements, or all other sorts of trauma. You know, it doesn't take much to traumatize a young person. The key is, you know, how resilient that individual is or has the ability to become. Many are resilient, but many aren't. And the trauma stays and has impacts on one a child's ability to succeed. And that's why I think it's important that we also make sure that the needs of foster kids, although those are not the only kids experience trauma, but that those needs, and given the statistics around their abysmal graduation rates or college rates, that we need to work better and do better by them. And so I hope that will become part of this. I know the city can be proud that we have a children's levy that invests $12 million a year in proven programs to increase the number of Head Start kids, increase the number of early Head Start kids, increase after school programs, some of which include PE-related activities, and also to do mentoring and, as was recently adopted by voters in 2008, a new thrust, which is investments that will help children in foster care succeed. And there's a lot of work to be done in that area. I hope this group will engage in those efforts as well. And certainly the Children's Levy will work with you to make sure that our investments are contributing to the cradle to grave cradle to career initiative before us. And my final comment is, I think, picking up on some of the comments of my colleagues, you know, I do get out and visit schools, and I'm always amazed, no matter what's going on in the world of Salem or in the world of, you know, woe is us about education, I'm constantly impressed with the quality of the teachers and the administrators in those schools and their esprit de corps, and also a significant number of parents who I see, and they're doing one thing or another. So it's very uplifting to actually get out and spend some time in a school and see these dedicated people. And that's why I do it, actually, is to thank them for the job they do. So I think there's a lot of good things going on in the schools in Portland. So thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Well, first I want to say that this is Education City Council, and this City Council has made investments, doubled its investments in Connected by 25, has approved investments of a great education team in the mayor's office. I want to thank Kali Ladd, who's the director of education for the mayor, along with Todd Diskin and Reese Lord, who are part of that team. Have produced amazing results on a very quick timeline of 24 months, working in partnership with anyone and everyone that can be of help to the cause. My work in this area is because it's important for the city. My work in this area is also, though, from a personal experience. Come from a smart, hardworking family, but my mom dropped out of high school. Four kids in my family, two dropped out of high school. And I was able to see that the personal experience behind the statistics as being part of that in my upbringing. And there are a lot of hardworking, smart folks out there that simply, for a variety of reasons, don't make it through to high school. Now, I'm lucky that my mom and my siblings went on to graduate from high school, and my mom went on to get a master's degree in architecture, and my brother graduated from University of Washington. But the human toll of the dropout is immense. So my work in this area is inspired by that and dedicated to that, and it will continue. This is radical common sense. This will require all of us to be accountable. And by all of us, I mean everyone, including the kids, including the students, including the parents. And it is exciting to be part of a collection of cities in the United States that is at the forefront of this kind of innovation. Hard to understand, maybe, innovation, but important innovation. It is the only way forward, with or without money, with or without more money. So my thanks to everyone. And we have a lot more work to do. That we sort of dug out a place for the foundation, and now we'll go to work building and rebuilding this continuum, which I kind of like, Commissioner, inspired by your testimony, sort of flirtation, initial flirtation to the grave. By the way, the Cradle to Career is a working title for the project, and that is not the final title for the project. Aye. Thank you all. All right. Can you please read the title for resolution item number, time certain item number 1588?
Accept through promulgation the 2010 Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan, also known as Portland's Natural Hazard Risk Reduction Strategy.
Can you hang on 2 seconds?
Which documents the hazards, their impacts, the city's vulnerabilities, and the strategies to reduce loss due to the hazards.
The number one goal of the city is to make sure that we are safe and peaceful, and not only does the federal government require us to come forward with a risk reduction strategy that identifies natural hazards, so we're making the different distinction between natural hazards and human-made hazards. We face and determine actions that will lower their impact on the city. This title, which is Portland's Natural Hazard Risk Reduction Strategy, is also known as the 2010 Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan. Both titles are kind of hard to understand, but we thought that the first title, the Natural Hazard Risk Reduction Strategy, was a little more decipherable than the Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan. But basically, this requires us to look at where we have the most vulnerability for natural hazards, natural disasters of various magnitudes, do everything we can up front to prevent them. Some are more preventable than others. Earthquakes, not so preventable. Fires on the bluff, more preventable. And to be prepared now, if we are unfortunate enough to be subject to such a hazard, to prepare now how to respond to them, both in the immediate terms and in the longer terms. Really appreciate the group of folks in front of us. Carmen, are you going to lead us off?
I am. Thank you, Mayor, and welcome. I'm pleased to bring forward for Council's approval today the 2010 Natural Hazard Risk Reduction Strategy. This document is a 5-year update of the original 2005 plan and is the driving mechanism that enables our continued participation in the National Flood Insurance Program, and which has brought in millions of dollars for natural hazard risk reduction projects throughout the city, some of which you'll hear about later today. This has been truly a collaborative, multi-bureau effort, and I want to acknowledge in particular the assistance of several bureaus, including the Water Bureau, Transportation, Parks, Bureau of Environmental Services, Bureau of Development Services, and Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Why is natural hazard mitigation important? Well, first of all, because natural hazards are increasing in their frequency, severity, and length. But more importantly, whether it's because of floods, earthquakes, or as we saw yesterday, tornadoes, natural hazards cause loss of lives, damage to property, irreparable harm to the environment, and of course, threats to public health and the economy. The good news is that these consequences can be lessened by taking effective strategies to lower our vulnerability to those natural hazards. The same way that we can influence the health, safety, economic vitality, and sustainability of the city through things such as land use planning, zoning, transportation planning, stormwater management, building codes, et cetera, we can also build disaster-resilient cities. The Natural Hazard Risk Reduction Strategy connects and complements the work of other city bureaus as part of the city's overall effort to build a livable, sustainable, and healthy city. If we continue to link emergency planning with broader community outcomes, particularly as part of the Portland plan, we're also investing in disaster-resilient communities. So just as we think of emergency preparedness as a series of small steps that, taken over a long period of time, can increase our preparedness for various natural hazards, the same is true with disaster resiliency. We look at it as a series of small steps that we can take now that can lessen our vulnerability to tomorrow's hazards. So for 2010, we're focusing on the 8 natural hazards that are most likely to impact the city of Portland, and those include earthquake, flooding, landslide, wildland urban interface fire, erosion, invasive plant species, and severe weather. So we're considering this part phase one, and to talk to you about phase two is Patty Reuter.
Hi, I'm Patty Reuter, planning manager for POEM, Portland Office of Emergency Management. There?
Thank you.
Okay, good. And with respect for the citizens of Portland and to answer the questions posed by council before this presentation, I am addressing the public involvement process for our risk reduction strategy. There are many who do not understand their role in disaster risk reduction. Commissioners, with your help and your direction, we can get the correct bureaus and community members involved in our risk reduction strategy. Thank you so much for your participation and enthusiasm in naming possible bureaus that should be participating. This is a living document. It is a list of recommendations. It is not law, nor is it finished. As a living document, it will continue to grow and become greater the more energy we put into it. What we present today is the first phase of our natural hazard risk reduction strategy. This part is about research, verification of facts, and bureau resource review. This is an update of the 2004 plan. We consulted bureaus, scientific experts, and researchers to create a document that we would be proud to take to the public as a base document for their involvement. This time around, we announced the beginning of the review online, have the 2004 plan online for the public to review and provide comment on. But our commitment to public involvement is more than committee work and asking for review. We are proud of our first phase document, and now we'll move forward to make sure that the right bureaus and community members are involved and that the public knows exactly what the city can allocate resources to. We did not want to go forward promising the public what we could not deliver. We plan to take the plan, the strategy, to neighborhood coalition boundary areas. Invite community organizations, diverse community organizations, schools, and existing bureau projects that are currently existing in the coalition area. At these gatherings, we will talk about the hazards they face, the resources they have in their areas, such as hospitals, clinics, grocery stores, fire stations, and the projects that the community is already working on, such as planting trees or invasive plant species eradication. And we will talk about how those current activities also reduce hazards. We will ask them to identify risk reduction projects that they can work on. We'll even ask them to make proposals for funding those projects. Our goal is to have a community risk reduction strategy that will become a part of the 2010 community risk reduction strategy that will include community decision makers and actual on-the-ground participatory projects. I cannot give you details about these projects because that's decisions of the public involvement process. They're going to come together, they're going to review the plan, they're going to make some decisions, and they're going to put things forward. We have asked for funding for the State Office of Emergency Management and are working on the details of the scope of work now. That's the request that was put in for a consent agenda number 1607. I'm proud of this plan because of its progressive thinking, its inclusion of so many bureaus and linkages to other plans. The city is beginning to realize that everyone has a part of an emergency of the emergency management system. Some bureaus respond to fire and respond to emergencies like fire, police, water, and transportation. Some bureaus make sure our government continue to operate in disasters such as management and finance, risk, parks and recreation, planning and sustainability. And many bureaus have identified that they can lower the impact of emergencies by being proactive, saving money, our livability, and the time it will take to bring ourselves back to normal. Again, with your guidance and direction, we hope that more bureaus and community members will join us in creating a safer city. Today we have testimony and it was from our different bureaus that have participated and benefited from being a part of the mitigation plan, the risk reduction plan. And to start off, Roberta Jortner, to my left, will be talking about Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Thank you.
Before we do that, can I just ask some clarifying questions? So what's before us today is the baseline for what you're also calling for is additional work. Is that correct?
Correct, Mayor.
Okay. And that the additional work needs to include even more outreach and connection to bureaus, to other agencies outside the city, but who have which have responsibility inside the boundaries of the city, and then to citizens themselves.
Correct, Mayor. And agenda item number 1607 specifically addresses that issue. We're applying for some federal grant funds to continue to do the public involvement process as well as meet internally with other city bureaus.
So this was the baseline is a factual baseline. And when would we return to City Council having gone through the next phase that would include more direct public involvement and even more outreach to agency partners?
We would anticipate an annual update to council before the final adoption at the next five-year plan update.
Okay. So you'll be back to us on an annual basis to show progress?
Correct.
So this is a baseline document of sort of the conditions of Portland?
Correct.
Yes, Commissioner.
So I need some clarification because the title of the resolution says accept, but the content of the resolution says adopt. And so I'm wondering about amendments such as the ones that I sent you at midnight last night regarding how do we get this document amended?
We can certainly amend the document at any time. We've had to forward the existing draft to both the State Office of Emergency Management and the Federal Emergency Management Agency for their review of the plan. So those approvals are taking place concurrently with us bringing this forward to council. If we don't meet the minimum federal requirements by FEMA, we can't have any further progress on this plan.
So I have to vote for this, otherwise it doesn't pass. And so I really don't like having this last minute not being able to make amendments on something that I'm actually adopting rather than accepting. So are you making the amendments that I made? Do you have an amendment list?
We will create – right. We haven't responded to all the questions that you posed in your email. We're working on that today. We certainly hope to have a list of all amendments we're going to make to the plan available no later than the end of the week.
So we could, if we wanted to be responsive to Commissioner Fritz's, we could hear this tomorrow. We could take whatever testimony there is today, have all that happen, and then hear it again tomorrow.
I would greatly appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay. So we'll proceed.
Do we get a copy of what you're proposing? I'd like to know.
Yeah.
Since you would like to know before you vote, I'd like to know what you're proposing.
Yeah, it's mostly adding bureaus that weren't consulted in the action items.
I'd like to see a copy of that.
Do you mind if we distribute it?
Oh, no, I'll send it to everybody. I was getting feedback from the staff first.
Okay, so we'll proceed with the presentation, take whatever testimony there is today, and then we'll hold it over for a vote until tomorrow after the 3 o'clock.
And as a further clarification, if I may, mm-hmm. on 1607, the $26,000 that is proposed isn't nearly enough to do an adequate public involvement process, as I know we all recognize. Given that the $26,000 sum is the maximum that we can apply for, I'd like us to adopt that ordinance allowing application for the grant and allow Carmen as director of the Portland Office of Emergency Management and Amalia Alicante-Morris as director of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to invite our coalition partners to participate in that process and to figure out how that $26,000 would be divided up in the scope of work. Because I appreciate the sentiment to have some money for action items. When it turns out that the action item is $50 per neighborhood, that's really not much that a citizen can do. So we're going to have to figure out how to maximize the use of that money and get some agreement with our community partners as to whether they want to participate before we nail down the scope of work.
We're happy to do so, Commissioner. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and council members. Again, my name is Roberta Jortner, and I manage the Environmental Planning Section for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. As noted in the letter of December 14th from Director Susan Anderson, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability supports the resolution, both as an active participant in this planning process and as an implementing partner. Specifically, the 2010 plan calls on the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to integrate natural hazard information and risk reduction opportunities into city policy and urban form decisions through the Portland plan and through the upcoming comprehensive plan update. To date, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has compiled extensive natural hazard information working with POEM and others to integrate with the buildable lands inventory process currently underway. And as the Portland plan moves into evaluating alternative growth scenarios and other policy decisions, this plan will help inform how the city prioritizes where and how development takes place, infrastructure investments, and protection and management of areas prone to landslides, wildfire, fire, and flooding. And we know these are issues of concern to neighborhoods today. So we will be integrating that into the Portland plan public involvement process as well. While there's no separate climate change hazard in the plan, the mitigation actions in the plan will improve the city's resiliency to climate change impacts, including the uncertain but inevitable changes in the patterns for precipitation and humidity, stream flow patterns, and the ranges of invasive plants and animals. And as Carmen mentioned, there's been an additional hazard included in this plan, the hazard related to invasive plant species. And this plan will reinforce the code improvements that Bureau of Planning and Sustainability brought to this council earlier this year, along with amendments to the Portland plant list, and bolsters the upcoming citywide tree project proposal to restrict the planting of nuisance and invasive trees on city property and rights of way. The citywide tree project, which is coming to you in early February, will also address other actions in the plan, including the much-needed streamlining of regulations related to tree pruning in environmental resource areas that are also prone to urban wildfire, and this is an action that's strongly supported by Portland Fire and Rescue. Finally, your approval, as you know, will provide the city with continued access to critical funding for projects that will reduce public health and safety risks to Portlanders both in the long term and in the short term, and that's a good thing.
Thank you. Hi.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and commissioners. My name is Mary Ellen Collentine, and I'm a principal engineer with Portland Water Bureau. Amongst my duties, I have the emergency management program for Portland Water. I'm here today to speak in support of the resolution accepting Portland's natural hazard risk reduction strategy. Portland Water Bureau was an active participant in development of the earlier plan 5 years ago and in the 2010 update. The 2010 plan builds on the earlier plan, takes a holistic, multi-hazard approach to vulnerabilities. It recommends actions that have multiple benefits to risk reduction. Each bureau that participated brought a perspective to the table, but the collaboration between bureaus facilitated by this process has enhanced the city's ability to reduce risk with a unified approach. I want to commend POEM for the admirable job that they did bringing parties to the table to complete the plan. I understand that collaboration will continue after this plan is accepted, including the public outreach portion. The plan contains several recommended actions that are, of course, important to Portland Water. One of them was in the Daily Journal of Commerce today. There's a report on the LIDAR imaging partnership that's been going on between the state Dogami and the city of Portland. Those images, along with enhanced geographic information systems, will show enhanced areas where landslide hazards are where infrastructure is vulnerable to landslide hazards within Portland. We've also done this some of this work up in our watershed to also look at those hazards. Additionally, there's recommendations to partner with utilities to reinforce or strengthen power to the Columbia South Shore well field. Recommendations that we intend to go forward with to update our infrastructure master plan and our system vulnerability assessments, assess vulnerability of the water system to seismic hazard, and mitigate the water system against landslide and seismic hazards. We also have in the plan to bury conduits under the Sandy River. We just finished a major project. We're just in the last phases of finishing a major project to bury conduits 2 and 4 in a tunnel under the Sandy. And we still have conduit 3 to go, so that is in the plan. And to upgrade trestles that carry the main water supply conduits. So I wanted to talk.
May I just interrupt there because I didn't understand that, and I appreciate Carmen letting me know about that, and congratulations to Commissioner Leonard. We're talking about putting the conduit buried underneath the dirt is like way down. We're not talking about just putting the pipe in the river, and it's crossing the Sandy rather
it's
than going
crossing
along
the Sandy River about 100 feet deep in a tunnel.
Perpendicular to the river to get underneath it,
yes.
Rather than putting it down the river. Because I was concerned that we're not making the same mistake we made with sewers in putting them in rivers that then we know that causes problems. So thank you very much for clarifying.
Sure,
that.
You're welcome. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the last item, the conduit trestle projects that have happened with Portland Water. And I think that's a great success story with the first hazard mitigation plan. In our system vulnerability assessment, we identified the conduits coming out of the Bull Run watershed on these trestles as being extremely vulnerable to several hazards. These included landslides, flooding, earthquakes, and human impacts. This information was incorporated into the 2005 Hazard Mitigation Plan. Because of the inclusion of these projects in the plan, the Water Bureau was able to obtain a $3 million pre-disaster mitigation grant from FEMA. So this was used to harden conduit crossings at what areas known as Sesters and Dyacks. That grant paid for 3/4 of the project. So this project helped ensure that we can continue to deliver Bull Run water into town and mitigate against potential natural hazards. So these projects, along with other projects like the Sandy River Crossing project, have all greatly increased the reliability of Portland's water supply. In closing, I request that Council accept or approve the resolution. I'm not sure which language we're using today. I accept the Natural Hazard Risk Reduction Strategy so that the city can continue to work together to reduce vulnerabilities to natural hazards and obtain federal funding for projects in the future, such as we did with the conduit trestle project. Thank you.
So perhaps one way to resolve the adopt to accept bit would be to add a second be it further resolved saying something like that the plan will be amended after appropriate public process has been conducted. That way it's clear that we don't think it's a final document.
Absolutely, Commissioner. We'll do that.
I'd like to invite up the Fire and Parks Bureau to talk about what their projects have been.
Great, thanks.
Thanks for waiting, gentlemen.
Perhaps I'll go first because I'm going to be short here. But Mayor Adams, members of the council, Dave McAllister, Portland Parks and Recreation. Portland Parks and Recreation strongly supports council, and I'm using the word adoption, of the 2010 Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan, a.k.a. the National Hazard Risk Reduction Strategy. And I just want to mention that the recognition in the 2004 plan of wildfire as a natural hazard in our urban wildland interface allowed the city to secure a FEMA grant of over $1 million. An interbureau effort by fire, Bureau of Environmental Services, Parks, and a number of other bureaus used the FEMA grant funding to raise public awareness and education of wildfire in the city. We used it to refine our processes and procedures in handling wildfire and to implement fuel reduction and invasive species eradication projects in three important areas of the city: Powell Butte, the Willamette Escarpment, and Forest Park, and is now a catalyst in developing a soon-to-be-released county community wildfire protection plan that will allow the city to leverage additional grant funding. So Parks considers the 2004 action items and the updates in our 2010 plan as integral to the continued management of our system of parks, green spaces, and our urban forest. It is a valuable foundation document in our management system, and we recognize that and hope for its adoption today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Dick Haney, one of your assistant fire marshals, and I was the chairman of the committee that put this the wildfire portion of this together back in 2004. I just want to talk to you about the importance and the synergy of these plans. It's not just something that sits on a shelf. We've actually made some really good movement citywide when it comes to wildfire mitigation. I know when I was headed for my first meeting, I was warned by my other in-house people who have been involved with interface fire mitigation efforts in Fire Bureau. They're saying that you're going to get stonewalled by the other groups and bureaus that have a convergent view of that ecological sustainability would trump wildfire protection. But the synergy is that when you get everybody together in the same room, everybody's interested in sustainability and safety in the city of Portland, and there are common grounds that can be found. And that's what was exciting about this, and we've made strong strong partnerships, and one of them is between parks and fire. One of the things that have grown out of this is that I think, well, even after the grant, I know we will still be partnering with prescribed burns because it's something that's required for our firefighters to have live fire experience in order to keep their certifications up. And Roberta Joyner, who you've talked to from Planning and Sustainability, she's been a strong partner. We worked together to allow some wildfire mitigation pruning in the current Title 33, and she's contacted me during the inception and writing of the new Title 11, the city forest title. So this has been a great collaboration and great effort, and having this updated every 5 years, so it keeps us focused on what the end game should be when it comes to security and sustainability in the city, and is very worthwhile. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Any other invited testimony? All right. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on item 1588? Then we're going to actually, I was mistaken, there is no council tomorrow, so we're going to hold this over until after the 3 p.m. today. Okay. I was told there's no council.
There's a work session tomorrow, but not a regular council meeting.
Okay. All right. So this will we will continue this hearing until after the conclusion of the hearing on 1642.
Thank you.
All right. That gets us to the regular agenda. But before we do that, We have a special presentation. What item is it?
1640.
Can you please, so unless there are objections, I'd like to move up. And could you please read, Sue, item number 1640?
Thank you, ma'am. Yeah.
1640. Authorize a disposition and development agreement to convey Block 49 to Reach Community Development Corporation, Inc. for $1 and provide up to $23 million in tax increment financing for development of 209 units of affordable housing in the North McAdam Urban Renewal Area.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Mayor Adams, thank you for the courtesy of moving this up. And we appreciate your consideration, and we are delighted today to join to welcome a panel that includes the director of the VA hospital. And we know his time is very dear, so we appreciate the courtesy you extended to our bureau. Mayor and colleagues, I'm pleased to introduce this item that marks a milestone in the Block 49 project, the so-called affordable housing development in South Waterfront. Today, we are officially asking the Council to approve a Development and Disposition Agreement, or DDA, for the Block 49 project. And under this DDA, we will convey the property to our designated nonprofit developer, Reach Community Development Corporation, and provide for financing. In taking this action today, we will be fulfilling a promise long overdue to deliver affordable housing in South Waterfront. We believe this project is an example of the triple dividend that can be achieved through this type of investment. First, of course, is affordability. The project will contain 209 units of housing affordable to people of very modest earnings, including 42 veterans who will pay not more than 30% of their income for their homes. Second, services. The project will be owned and operated by Reach CDC, a trusted partner with the city with over 25 years of experience in developing projects of this kind. Reach will provide supportive services and quality management of the project. I'm also pleased to announce that they intend to relocate their operation to South Waterfront, bringing 50 family wage jobs to that community, people that will be going to restaurants and using the services. And they will be purchasing two-thirds of the commercial space for their new headquarters. And third, sustainability. This project is well designed, looks great, and will be rated LEED Silver, which will be providing cost savings and energy efficiency for the next generation. I would be remiss before introducing Director Van Vliet if I didn't acknowledge that this today would not have been possible without an action that was taken in the fall of 2008. And that was when Mayor Adams and I announced that we intended to unify both halves of the House here in the city, both halves of the teams that provide housing services. And by that, of course, we meant to bring the talent and treasure from the Portland Development Commission over and to join with the former Bureau of Housing and Community Development to create the new Portland Housing Bureau. In the past 2 years, we not only successfully launched the new bureau, but we hired a dynamic new director in Margaret Van Vliet, who's here today. We will be coming back to you this afternoon seeking your approval of a new commission, which will be advising us and holding our feet to the fire going forward. This is technically the first major development that has been presented to Margaret, and like many of the things she inherited, contained its fair share of challenges, not the least of which is that the worst recession in our lifetime occurred, making financing very difficult. And if you doubt that, count the number of cranes in the air in downtown Portland. In addition, a rising tide of need with diminished resources. I would also be remiss if I didn't thank my council colleagues for their continued commitment to funding housing and the safety net during tough times. This project, like the Resource Access Center, came to Margaret and was shaped, and I believe we can say today, is a better project with a stronger financial pro forma and a better operating plan going forward, which means for the people we serve, great news. With your support today, we will be moving forward to a groundbreaking this spring and a ribbon cutting next fall. I want to thank Jacob Fox and John Warner, Barbara Shaw, and the whole team at at the Portland Housing Bureau for their great work. But it starts with